I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Even though it's been 50 years since I graduated from high school, about this time every year, I have that familiar feeling of dread and excitement that I used to have when I knew that the start of the school year was right around the corner. It was an opportunity for a fresh start, and I would vow every year that this time I would start my papers on time and I would not wait until the night before to begin studying for tests. That's probably true for a lot of teachers. We've invited three Philadelphia middle school teachers to tell us why they teach, the joys, the heartaches, the headaches, how they connect with their students, the challenges of managing a classroom, and dealing with the demands of parents and principals and headquarters. Let me introduce them to you. Gerald Dessus is an eighth grade social justice teacher at Mastery Charter School Shoemaker Campus in West Philadelphia. In fact, he serves as the social justice content leader for the Mastery Network. He's taught for 8 years a combination of middle school literature, composition, and history. And Gerald, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you as well. Monique Trager is a seventh grade English teacher at Thomas K. Finletter Academic Plus School. That's in the Olney section of North Philadelphia. This will be her third year of teaching. Monique, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It is awesome to be here. Thank
nice
you so
much. Nice to have you with us as well. And Michael Southerton rounds out our trio of guests, and he teaches writing and film studies at the Philadelphia School District's Crossroads Accelerated Academy. This is for students who are over age. They've either failed a year or got a late start in school. And this is his 12th year teaching in the district and his school also in West Philadelphia. Michael, nice to have you with us on Radio
Thanks
Time.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We put out a special alert to all the teachers that listen to Radio Times. We want to hear from you. The email address, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join our conversation. So I talked about my, and I have to say it really is true. It's been a long time since I went in school, but I still feel like, uh-oh, the school year is about to start. How do you prepare, Gerald? How do you prepare for a school year? And it really is a marathon in many ways, I would think.
So a lot of meetings and trainings, but personally, I like to create like a new school year playlist, music playlist that gets me going in the morning.
Right. What's on your playlist?
Right now, there's a lot of Brandy. just a lot of neo soul, R&B music, feel good music.
Yeah. To kind of get you ready for the day.
Yeah, that usually sets me for the morning, just setting up the classroom, collaborating with other staff members, just making sure we're all aligned and we're on the same page.
Yeah. How about for you, Monique?
This is
your third year.
My third year. Yeah. So still pretty new. I would say, yeah, music is a huge part of it. My colleagues and I like also have a lot of the same music taste, so it's nice. We've been listening to some War on Drugs, local Philly band, and my genre would be more like 90s alt rock.
Oh, really?
Harvey Danger, Smashing Pumpkins. But yes, I also try to listen to NPR all the time, listen to podcasts all the time to try to have things fresh in my mind, more connections I can draw. And I think by just staying really aware of the world around me helps me navigate not only like my long-term planning, but where to take things kind of short-term too.
Let me get your what you do, Michael, and I should add you're the actual musician in the room here. but what do you, and this is your 12th year, so
yes.
You're a bit of an old hand. I mean, are there certain things that you do to prepare for the year?
Well, you know, I remember my first couple years teaching, I just would not be able to sleep the night before, like 4 or 5 years just could not sleep. And that's kind of passed now. Now it's the more that I kind of make the classroom and the school feel like an extension of home for me and for my students, the more comfortable I feel and the more gradual, I guess, the transition.
How do you do that? How do you make school feel like home?
Well, you know, you have a lot of conversations with the students about the atmosphere, the environment that we're trying to create. I'm a big proponent of the RST rule, as my mom called it, respect, sensitivity, tolerance. So we talk about what those things mean, not just to me, but what it means to them. And we try to just start to, from day one, have a conversation about the world we want to live in, mm-hmm. The people they want to be in that world, and how that our classroom can reflect that world as well.
I saw you, or actually both of you nodding your head, but I saw you nodding your head, Gerald. Does it take a certain kind of teacher, though, to teach 7th and 8th grade? Because I think, I mean, the children at that age, some of them look like they're still in 1st grade. Some of them look like they're graduated high school. They're all over the place. We know about the hormones. What does it take to be able to connect with these kids?
A lot of patience and just a willingness to dive in to the emotional aspect, to the trauma, just... It's more than your content area. It's more than your classroom, and you have to be willing to get to know your students on a personal level, their families, and build those relationships. I think that's one of the most important aspects of what we do.
Of having that relationship.
Yes.
You use the word trauma.
Yes.
Because you're dealing with kids who've been traumatized?
Yes. A large portion of our students in West Philly have come from, you know, trauma backgrounds, and oftentimes they're not able to kind of enter school and like leave that part of their lives outside of school. So we do a lot of supporting and providing them with strategies in the classroom, outside of the classroom, to help them cope.
How about for you, Monique?
Yeah,
What do you like about these kids, or maybe even love about these kids?
I do love them. They're weird, and I think that's so cool because I would say I am too. I love that they still have so much like kid energy about them. They're so curious. Like, you teach them a new word and they like use it everywhere and they're like really excited, right? But they are also understanding the world more, and I think they are still in this like sort of play phase where, yeah, they're not like playing with blocks or whatever anymore, but they're playing with their identities in the world and what it means to become, you know, a young person, autonomous with their own mind in the world at large. Right. And I think that's a beautiful thing to be a part of. And it is also really challenging at times. I mean, in addition to, you know, the large scale, trauma that a lot of students are facing in Philadelphia, even the trauma of like, oh my gosh, my boyfriend just broke up with me.
Yeah,
right. I think that is all of those like small life things kids are starting to learn how they react to as well. And it does take a lot of energy to sort of walk through all of that with them.
Well, there was an interesting story in the Philadelphia Inquirer today about, and I'll just quote here, in Philadelphia, part of a week-long intensive new employee institute featuring sessions on trauma-informed care, creating inclusive classrooms, and engaging multilingual families. For new teachers coming to the district, this is part of the training that they have to do. Makes sense to you, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I've upwards of 8 out of 10 students are dealing with trauma in the school district of Philadelphia.
80%.
Yes. It sounds like an extreme number.
It sure does.
It shocked me when I saw it as well. But I guess it doesn't surprise me because it makes sense. Mm-hmm. So many students struggle with events at home from their past or things that are happening right now. And I think it's one of the most important things we can do is teach our teachers how to be sensitive about mm-hmm. that, our administration how to be sensitive about that. The smallest thing that you could say or do could have the most dramatic impact on a student at any given time. So we need to be aware of
right.
that.
I mean, I'm not saying anything that you don't know or most people don't know, but teaching is about, Gerald, it's about relationships, right? I mean,
yes.
Bottom line, it's about that relationship that you have with that student or those students.
Absolutely. Especially when we're thinking about like student achievement and mm-hmm. Helping our students reach their goals, it's much easier to do that work when you have those relationships, when you have students bought into your content area, to you as a person, when they trust you, when they feel safe in your classroom. It makes their overall experience feel, as you said, Michael, it makes their overall experience feel like home.
But do you feel like you get tested every year with your students about who are you and how you're going to treat me and what's going to happen for the next 9 months?
I think that's like that's ongoing. That's throughout the year.
Never ends.
As students learn more and more about themselves, they then start to figure out ways to push boundaries and challenge your thinking. How do you feel about this topic? And how do you feel about this group of people? Because they're also like still trying to figure out themselves as well.
Monique, this is your third year.
Yes.
Does it still feel new to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it feels, every teacher I've talked to said it feels new all the time. Maybe that will go away one day, but I'm not anticipating
we'll find out
it anytime
Michael, whether that ever does or not.
I think what, you know, in this conversation about trauma in relationships is I wasn't quite prepared for the transference of that onto me personally. I thought, I knew what I was getting into. I thought I, you know, understood about like building relationships, mm-hmm. but the pain, for lack of a better word, that can seep into your being as well. I don't think we talk about it quite enough. And I think that has been a difficult thing for me to sort of figure out how to show up and be present and be there for my students, but also what boundaries or things I need to put in place so I'm able to do that. I think I'm still sort of working through that.
I'd be curious, Michael, whether you've had that similar experience, and after 12 years, if you have found that, you know, that line between caring deeply about these children, but also knowing you can't take them home with you.
It's a tough, yeah, it's really difficult. It's really difficult. I think you have to be able to know your boundaries and know your limits and appreciate those things, mm-hmm. you know. I think we care so much about the kids that we want to be able to, like, take care of them and be there for them all the time. But one of the hardest things about being a teacher, even in a classroom, is letting someone do it on their own, knowing when to step away, knowing when they ask a question, how do you do this, to give them a little bit more time to say, well, why don't you figure it out? You know, mm-hmm. take a couple more minutes or ask a friend. Knowing when to step away is one of the most important things we can do, because obviously they're going to be leaving us someday. They're going to be going out into the world, and hopefully we're preparing them to be independent, critical thinkers who don't need to rely on me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Michael Southerton. He teaches writing and film studies at the Philadelphia School District's Crossroads Accelerated Academy, which is in West Philadelphia. This is his 12th year teaching in the district. Gerald Dessus is an 8th grade social justice teacher at Mastery Charter School Shoemaker Campus, also in West Philadelphia. This is his 8th year teaching in Philadelphia. And Monique Trager is a 7th grade English teacher at Thomas K. Finnerton Academic Plus School in the Olney section of North Philadelphia, about to start her third year teaching. We've got calls and comments coming in. Stay with us. Much more to talk about after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with three Philadelphia middle school teachers about why they teach, the joys, the headaches, the heartaches, the highs, the lows. We'll be talking about how they connect and engage their students over the material and, of course, the challenges of managing the classroom. You can join us, that phone number 1-888-477-9499, specifically looking for teachers to join our conversation on Radio Times today. Email address, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read a tweet from Stephen, who's a teacher. Then we'll get Jenny from Collingswood to join us. Stephen says, getting ready for the year? What do I do? Prayer, sleep, relax. I'm no good to anyone if I go into it stressed for whatever reason. Let me get Jenny from, looks like Collingswood, to join us on Radio Times. And Jenny, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm terrific.
Good.
I've been teaching for 39 years. Well, this is my 39th year of teaching. And I've taught everything from kindergarten through high school. And the way I keep going and keep enjoying what I'm doing, which I do, I love what I do, every year I give myself a challenge. Last year it was We've just gotten a 3D printer. I teach at an elementary school now. And I said, okay, I'm going to come up with a great project for this. So I keep myself challenged and interested and excited about what I do. I put up, you know, new things. I order new books for the kids. We have fun days. We have dance breaks. We just keep having fun and keeping going. And your panel was talking about, yes, it hurts sometimes because you see kids who have problems outside of the school.
Sure.
And I can't take them home, but I can make school a place where they want to be, where they feel safe, where they feel excited, where they know that they're loved.
Well, Jenny,
that keeps me going.
That sounds like a great classroom, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Gerald, it's interesting. She says, after 39 years, wanting to make sure the experience is new for her.
Yes, absolutely. Thinking about this school year, our eighth grade team is trying to come up with new and exciting experiences for our students. So we're thinking about a ton of field trips. We're thinking about a new thing for our middle school students, royalty. So we're calling them kings and queens.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just building like this environment of, joy and humor and school spirit. So we're really working on that student experience piece.
Monique, do you have enough material? Do you get enough materials for your classroom?
Yeah, I mean, do you mean like...
like paper? Books?
Well, that is something I think the district is working on. It is, I think, always a challenge. And I am, with the move back to local control, I hope to see them take more steps to make sure that we have everything we need all the time. Some days, yes, some days, no. And I think that is also sort of like a struggle when you are, planning your day and you're like, oh, crap, like I have to go get tissues, hand sanitizer and paper. Right. That's not.
Do you pay out of pocket?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, of course, I'll do that, but in taking care of all the kids in Philadelphia, I think we have the resources, so I don't personally have to do that. And mm-hmm. I would like to see the shift to do that, to say, like, we care about these kids enough that we're just going to – this is not going to be, like, non-negotiable. But, it's a small part of a larger picture.
Absolutely. I mean, Michael, you've been through the good times, the bad times, the down times, the financial times.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Feel beat up over the last 12 years being a teacher in Philly?
No.
Good.
It's we were talking about earlier about do things ever not feel new? And I hope they always feel new. That's part of the excitement, part of the great thing, especially about 7th and 8th graders is that, they keep you young. They last year I had to learn how to play Fortnite. I had to do like all these, you have to keep up to be able to keep up with them. And it's great.
Gerald, you teach social justice.
Yes.
Tell us about why and how and the response from the kids.
It's needed. There's a narrative that is often not told in our classrooms, specifically our history classrooms. We have this environment at Shoemaker. We have a great group of staff that believe that this is important work. The kids love it. The community, they love it. Parents love it. We get an opportunity to talk about issues that are going on.
As we speak?
Exactly. And oftentimes we have amazing literature teachers and other content teachers who will try to include that in their content area, but they don't talk about it every day.
Yeah.
So we make sure that it's being brought up in class, that students are given a voice, and my voice is taken out of it. So they're doing the critical thinking. They're coming to their own decisions and views, and it's pretty amazing. It's definitely, out of, 7-8 years of teaching, it's definitely my favorite band of years.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. And the kids write as well, right?
Yes.
Writing about current events or connecting current events to past events,
yes.
Things like that.
Around December, they start writing essays every week. So it's a very writing-intensive course, still aligned to PSSAs and testing, but they're just writing about specific current event issues.
You teach English, Monique, and actually I should say Avi Wolfman-Arendt, who works here, did a profile of you about an assignment you gave to a class and what happened. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I gave them an assignment to write about a time they began to care about something larger than themselves. And they wrote these like beautiful narratives. And their engagement with that just blew me, like similarly, just blew me away. They were so ready to talk, and they wrote more than I've ever seen them write before. They were caring about which words they were using in a way I hadn't seen. So it was so moving. And I think that middle school, especially in how most Philly schools are organized, it's like K through 8.
Right.
So I think we lump them in with elementary school students a lot. And I'm not always sure that that is the best way to treat them, because they are so ready to like talk mm-hmm. about so many things. So it was a wonderful project. They got so involved, and it was cool to be able to facilitate that and not like teach it.
Did you learn something about your students you did not know?
I learned.
I'm assuming they wrote about their lives.
They did, in intense detail. Yes, we all learned a lot. But what I was most impressed with was how open they were.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody felt in that space judged, criticized, afraid to speak their voice. And I think that we often think of middle schoolers as like, you know, teasers, bulliers, you know, all of the stuff.
Eye rollers.
Yes.
Right.
But to see them not only feel comfortable telling their own stories, but support and be like, no, like you should write about this, or like, I didn't know you went through that. And to see those conversations emerge, I think we should all be doing more to encourage those voices. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be done.
Now, Michael, you work at an interesting school. This is Crossroads Accelerated Academy. So
yes.
It's a unique environment, I guess, within the district.
It is. It is. All of our students are overage seventh and eighth graders. Students come to us as seventh graders and do a full year with us as seventh graders. They return to us the following year, and they do both eighth grade and ninth grade in a single year.
So it is accelerated.
Yes, right? Yes. So, and it, to go along with what Monique said, a lot of our students who are over age seventh and eighth graders are in schools with much younger students. So, you know, we pull them outside of that environment. We're a small school, about 120 students. Mm-hmm. And so they get to be around just peers for the first time in a long time. And it's a really great experience for them.
So they might be 15 or, I mean, I'm trying to think. I forget what age generally people
15,
are.
16, some of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a second chance. I mean, it's a chance to, let's say they failed out or maybe even dropped out. It's a second chance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's part of the school district's alternative opportunity network. There are a number of schools in the district that right. look to get students back on track. Whether they're 7th or 8th graders, or even with the EOP night school program for people who are any age.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just quickly reintroduce all three of you. That's Michael Southerton, teaches writing and film studies in the Philadelphia School District's Crossroads Accelerated Academy. Monique Trauger is a 7th grade English teacher at Thomas K. Finletter Academics Plus School. And Gerald Dessus is an 8th grade social justice teacher at Mastery Charter School, Shoemaker Campus. All three of these teachers teach in Philadelphia. And we want you to join us, especially if you're a teacher. Again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. The joys, the challenges, the heartaches, the headaches. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read some comments here. One from Max, a tweet from Max. Any suggestions families can do to support your generous efforts and tremendous challenges to teach in 2018? Thank you for your commitment, inspiring our children to be critical thinkers, problem solvers, while solving individual differences. Families obviously are so important. Gerald, let me give you a chance to give a crack at Max's tweet.
I would say,
what role do you see parents playing?
Show up.
Show up.
The more active you are in our school community, the better, the greater the experience is for students. it makes it easier for us as teachers to build relationships with families and talk about those challenging conversations, you know, around student work, around behavior, when parents are active in the school community.
To show up, whether it's to talk with the teacher, to attend an assembly, to come to school night,
observe exactly.
All of
right.
those things.
Yes, absolutely.
You're nodding your head vociferously, Moni.
I love having parents stop by. Sometimes their students don't like it so much, but I think it is really important to be very transparent about like what mm-hmm. where their kids are spending all day long. I actually went to text my mom the other day, and I had to scroll through all of my parents, like, so-and-so's mom, so-and-so's mom. Like, my own mother didn't even pop up at first because I have so many, so many parent texts. But I think just that communication, and I think, you know, we reach out to parents about their students a lot, but I don't know if they're always encouraged to reach out to us. And I would find, like, if, you know, so-and-so is having a rough morning and you want to text me and let me know, I will welcome that. So, like, I think we can all sort of work on just better communication and more of it.
And more of it. You want to add to that, Michael?
Yeah, I think that you guys really hit the nail on the head. Be present, show up, but not only be part of our school, but let the school be part of your home. A lot of parents, especially in our district, are extremely busy. But mm-hmm. even if you just say to your child, all right, even if you're in bed by the time I get home, I just want to see your homework laid out on the table so I can look at it. And even just holding the students to that level of accountability every night can go a long way to just kind of reinforcing what's happening in the school.
Let me read some more comments. An email from Maria. I'm a recently retired teacher after 40 years in the classroom. The biggest challenge was not meeting the needs of the students, but attempting to engage parents in the process. And I think you've all sort of really underscored that. I mean, you're dealing with families here. And I'm assuming some of these parents did not have a great experience in school. So they might look at you or even the school with some degree of distance or skepticism. Do you think that's true, Gerald?
I think that happens often in schools. I'm grateful, like at Shoemaker, we have a strong group of parents who are committed to the work that we do. So if they can't, you know, show up for events or be present on a weekly, monthly basis, they do communicate via text. They answer all phone calls and respond to emails. It's tough. Every family is going through something different. So a challenge for us is always trying to navigate that and right. finding ways to kind of bridge that gap.
A tweet from Stephen, also a teacher. Relationships do matter beyond it being a buzzword or a buzz concept. It may mean I'm not writing up a kid for cussing me out or storming out of the room. This happened to me a few years ago with sixth grader. A kid came to the school the next day during my office hours and read a page-long apology note and ended with, "Mr. Fleming, you're the last one I got left to look up to." And obviously these are, you know, there are those moments when a kid is Michael going to freak out on you for whatever reason, and how do you deal with that?
Oh, that's a great question. First thing is remain calm. You know, you don't want to escalate the situation. We mentioned trauma earlier. A lot of our students, when they reach that level, it's because something has triggered them. It might have nothing to do with you at all. They might be taking it out on you. You first and foremost have to remain calm. You have to have procedures in place, I think, that you follow in your classroom always, so that the students around you are looking to you to they know that you're going to be able to handle the situation. And
are those sort of rules and regulations, this is what happens?
Like a normal expected mm-hmm. behaviors, that sort of thing. And always try to follow up with the student one-on-one. They might need to step out of the classroom for a while. At Crossroads, we have a great support system. Students can, if they need time, they can go see a lot of people. That doesn't always happen.
Right.
But even if they just need to step out for a little bit so you can speak to them one-on-one, that's what really builds relationships. And allowing students the opportunity to grieve and the opportunity to know that you're there for them is really important. Yeah.
You want to speak to that, Monique? And just, again, you're relatively new to teaching, and this can be tricky to try to navigate.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, some days I'm better at it than others. I think for me, what I really try to pay attention to is, like, when the kids are acting out of character. So if a kid does, you know, go off on you and they're normally, like, not like that, that those are the moments where you're really like, whoa, like, you go outside, like, do you need to take a walk? Like, mm-hmm. what? And sort of reapproach it later. And, you know, you also have kids that are sort of, that's a learned behavior that they show up with every day. So I think those approaches are a bit different. I think no matter what the, in the moment, like, your actions have consequences, disciplinary process is, going back to them and being like, checking in. Like,
with the students.
Exactly. Like, hey, this happened. Like, are you okay? Or, like, can you talk about why? If you don't feel like you want to talk to me, is there another adult in the building that you do feel comfortable with? Because every time I've done that, I've, like, found out some information. And you would never know if you didn't ask.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Again, talking with three middle school teachers who teach here in Philadelphia. I should add that part of a series we put together this summer, we began talking with high school graduates. We had a session with three principals in Philadelphia. Now we've got three teachers, Gerald Dessus, Michael Southerton, and Monique Trager. And again, you can join us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email. A lot of comments here. Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we are talking about 8th grade and 7th grade with our guest Monique Trager, 7th grade teacher at Thomas K. Finletter Academics Plus School in the Olney section of North Philadelphia. Michael Southerton teaches writing and film studies at the school district's Crossroads Accelerated Academy, and that's in West Philadelphia. And Gerald Dessus is an 8th grade social justice teacher at Mastery Charter School Shoemaker Campus, again, in West Philadelphia. I'm going to embarrass you, Gerald, because we have an email from Mary Beth. Hi, Gerald. So amazing to hear your voice. We taught together at AFPCS, what seems like eons ago. Yes. I remember watching you your first year of teaching and knowing you had great things ahead of you. You are now right down the street from each other. She is at Bieber and Winfield. Want to collaborate? If you want to collaborate on some social justice stuff, just let me know.
Yes. Absolutely.
So we, you know, delivering email messages to our guests. We also have an email from Joanne. I'm a first-time substitute after a 30-year teaching career in marketing. I've signed up for middle and high school. What should I expect? I mean, I remember having substitute teachers. We were not very nice to them. Is that what they should expect, Michael?
Expect it to be hard.
It's hard, right? It's harder than maybe having a regular classroom.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to be difficult. A lot of students don't take the work that's left for them seriously, if any work has been left for them at all, which hopefully it is. I think, just like any teacher, you've got to kind of like find yourself and be yourself, because kids, especially 7th and 8th graders, can see through a mask fast.
Yep.
So if you can bring some part of yourself to the classroom to make some sort of connection, that goes a long way, whether you're going to be there for a day or you're going to be long-term and get there throughout the year.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Gerald?
I would just say structure. It's really hard to build relationships with students when you're there for, you know, just that one period. But the more structure you provide for them, the better overall experience it will be.
And we appreciate you. Like the all the other teachers in the building are so glad that you're there. And that lets us, you know, go to a doctor's appointment or whatever. And like substitutes, thank you so much because like that gives us some moments to like be able to get some things done that we have to do too and know that our kids are in good hands.
But are there things a teacher can say, look, tomorrow you've got a substitute and I expect you to treat that person
absolutely
with the same respect you treat me?
Yeah. And I think you can tell the teachers that do a really good job with those relationship building. You know, they're teenagers. They're going to do what they're going to do. Right. But as teachers, you can also do a lot to set them up. Like, so listen, like exactly what you said, like, I'm going to go away and you're going to be amazing because that's what I expect you to do.
Right. Chances are we've got principals watching and maybe even the principals that you work for are listening to us. But I wonder, we did a roundtable a couple of weeks ago with three Philadelphia school principals. How important, Gerald, though, is a principal to a school, especially as a teacher?
They set the tone. They set the tone for staff and students and families. From day one all the way until, you know, day 180. I think it's important in some schools, you know, a principal's presence when maybe the principal is not around or is not present on that floor and everything runs smoothly, like no mishaps. You know that the work has been done beforehand.
How do you see it, Michael?
I totally agree. They set the tone for the school. I've been very lucky that I've worked for a lot of fantastic principals, and I know a lot of people who have left teaching primarily because of a difficult relationship with principals or have been turned off to teaching because of difficult relationships with principals.
And we should say you taught at South Philly High School, right?
I did. I taught at South Philadelphia High School. I taught at Lankenau High School and now at Crossroads Accelerated Academy.
Yeah, so you've had, I guess, a number of principals you've had to deal with.
Right. Most of them have been great, although I've had, you know, really, really difficult ones as well. I'm really lucky. At Crossroads right now, our principal, Kimberly Grahn, is excellent. And one thing I think she does very well is she gives teachers a lot of autonomy. She lets them be flexible with finding who they are, with maybe adjusting curriculum to benefit the students in the classroom. And I think that goes a long way to establishing a culture of mutual respect between faculty and staff.
You want to add, Monique, to this?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a ton of experience with different principals, but I will say, like, at my building, similarly, I think my principal, Ms. Edwards, she is very good at like demanding excellence from her teachers and from the students and from the parents. So she doesn't mess around, but I think that nobody questions her dedication to getting the best out of everybody all the time. And I think that that is critical for the success of your staff and your students.
How much, well, it's interesting, we haven't really talked a lot about the academics, the testing part of education, but I wonder to you, Gerald, you know, how much do those tests hang over what you do as a teacher? And we know about quote-unquote teaching to the test.
Right,
how much
right.
does that define what you do during the day?
No, I wouldn't say we like stress over a test. I think with good teaching, there's constant work around like analyzing data and making sure that each lesson is making the right move to drive student growth and student achievement. And I think when you teach that way, when you're constantly looking at student work and you're looking for trends, it makes like there's almost like no traditional like test preparation. You're not necessarily teaching to the test. It's simply like, my students are struggling with assertions, so I want to make sure that I'm putting the best strategies in place to support them and then in their growth.
I mean, you talked a bit about autonomy, but at the same time, there are these, I'm assuming, these, you know, these tests that are evaluated and determining whether the students are doing well, whether the teachers are teaching. Monique, how do you see this?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, you know, testing is still sort of relatively new right. to them in middle school. So I sort of approach it like just getting them comfortable with it. So like it's sort of like exposure, right? So this is, I try to frame things that I do sometimes like in the same format of the test or, you know, we'll do like an exit ticket that is the same language of the test because I don't want them to be, I know they know the stuff, right? And like my job is... My whole job is that they know the stuff. So I'm right. not necessarily worried that they know the content per se, but that how it's couched in like testing language and testing formats and the duration, yeah. I want them to feel those are the things that I feel more will like trip them up. So that's sort of where when I do like test prep, that's what I'm thinking about.
Well, it's interesting. You're an old hand at this, Michael, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, I think... you know, one of the most important things to do is to celebrate all different types of successes in your classroom. For some students, you know, staying awake that day, you never know what their home life. There's a lot of students that, you know, didn't sleep at all. So if a student's able to stay awake in your classroom, you're able to pull them aside and say, hey, I'm so proud of you. You know, you stuck with us today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every success should be celebrated. And I think, unfortunately, you know, we're in a place right now in the education system where success is celebrated by like a number that comes at
no
the end
question.
Of the year that students actually
they don't get
probably,
tested on staying awake in class.
Right, right. But and students probably never even see that score. Most students never know what score they got on like their mm-hmm. PSSAs or something like that. So, you know, celebrating successes in our relationships with each other in a social success, a student who doesn't ever speak up, raised their hand and spoke that day, to celebrate a success in a student goes up in front of the class and does a performance or a speech or recites a poem or whatever. And then also celebrating like, hey, perfect score on this week's spelling exam or something like that. If you're creating a culture where students feel like working hard and putting their best self forward will get them someplace and mm-hmm. make them feel welcome and successful, then they're going to do a lot better when it comes time for the big, you know, standardized test at the end of the year because they'll already have had that reinforcement that this is just one more mm-hmm. thing that they can be proud of.
But at the same time, you know, the measurement, it's as narrow as it is. That's what people look at. That's what people say, well, this is a good school. This is a struggling school. This is a failing school. I mean, it seems like there's no getting away from that number, even if what you see in the classroom can't be evaluated on a test.
That's true. That's true. I agree. I think, you know, if you are doing your job, you're preparing mm-hmm. students for success. And we know, you know, all of us have been to college. We all know what's required there. I like to communicate with other teachers to see like what they're doing in their classrooms, so that I can kind of measure what I'm doing that way as well. And I think if we're kind of paying attention to all these things, if you're paying attention to as Joe mentioned, data, you're looking at your standards, you're not mm-hmm. just, you know, flying blindly and you're just kind of like focusing on what's going on, what's expected of you through your job description.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing your job, but the most important thing is getting students to buy into it and believe it. Because they don't see a benefit to those scores in a lot of ways and mostly mm-hmm. it's to the school's benefit. So, you know, you have to get them to believe it.
The district now is under local control. There was a big fight, but that's what it is. But I wonder to all three of you, I'll start with you, Gerald, then if it is a kind of a fresh start for the district and for the charters that are part of the district, what would you change? I mean, what would make your job better, easier, more constructive, more helpful?
Wow. I would say overall more opportunities for our students to move beyond the classroom. Mm-hmm. Academic achievement is obviously at the forefront of everything we do. but we also want to focus on that student experience. Are they being exposed to the arts? Are they being exposed to what science may look like in different fields beyond the classroom? Obviously, that requires more funding, yeah. And there are many other, you know, political pieces that fuel that. But that would be my long-term hope.
Yeah. I realize this is kind of a pie-in-the-sky question, but to you, Monique, what are your thoughts?
I would like to see more transparency with how decisions are being made, with how money's being spent, with data and research that's going on. I know I have to collect data in my classroom. I know our principals and the assistant superintendents do, but I don't always see what exactly is happening with that. I think we should be doing that. But I think just more transparency overall with the decision-making processes and what's going on behind the scenes.
How about for you, Michael?
Yeah, I agree with what you've both said. And I think for me, a big part of it is being able to provide students with as many experiences as possible, try to expand their horizons, broaden their world, and give them many different types of classroom experiences as well, whether it's arts or vo-tech. Not everybody wants to be an academic. Not everybody is suited to be an academic, and not everyone should feel like they have to be an academic for whatever that term means. But I think being able to provide students with as many outlets as they can to find where they fit and what feels comfortable for them, and being able to make each of those things celebrated and a place or a source of pride for the student and for the district, I think could be really big.
I hate to save this question for the last, Gerald, and we've done whole shows on this, but you're African-American. How important, we're on the radio, so not everyone right. would know that. Sorry about that. But how important do you think that is to your students? very end of the show.
It's extremely important. I think more of our children of color need to see teachers that look like them, that represent their communities. And it's not just for the experience piece, it's not just for the engagement piece, but that image of success is like right in front of them. They can ask questions about, you know, what was your high school experience like? What was it like to get through college or deal with financial aid or get scholarships? Unfortunately, growing up, I only had a handful of African-American teachers, and the number of black males, one. Yes. So,
and they often get pushed into like more disciplinary roles.
Rather than the classroom role.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was, I think, my biggest challenge coming into teaching, making sure that I wasn't letting down my administrators at my first charter school, making sure I wasn't letting my administrators down because they were expecting me to be this classroom management, you know, expert.
Right. Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us today in Radio Times for what you do. A comment from Chris: there's a colony of angels on this planet that consists of teachers, nurses, and social workers. I am grateful for that. Thank you so much for coming in, and good luck this year. I'll put it that way. You're very welcome. Gerald Dessus is a 8th grade social justice teacher at Mastery Charter School, Shoemaker Campus. Michael Southerton teaches writing and film studies at the district's Crossroads Accelerated Academy. And Monique Trager is a 7th grade English teacher at Thomas K. Finletter Academics Plus School in the Olney section of North Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of the show, produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern, with assistance from Susan Greenbaum. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen.